live from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update. You can join our roundtable discussion of current events in both Oregon and the nation by dialing 646-721-9887 or in the chat room at www.krbnradio.com.
Back again, and I'm actually going to sort of act as host this morning because Robin is going to leave us, I guess, fairly early in the program. So even though she's here at the moment, she's not going to be here, and we've got lots of things to talk about. We're going to be talking to everybody. I have to say hi to everybody. Hello, good morning, Robin. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Oh. Good morning, everybody.
And Cindy?
Good morning. Greetings from Wheel Dryer Hill.
And Bradley.
Good morning.
I've got to learn to start putting Bradley first. We always leave him till last for some reason or other. I don't know why. But
it's all right.
We just do. We don't want you to feel left out or anything, Bradley.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to be talking about several things today, but probably starting out with the doomsday, the rapture, whatever you want to call it. And I'm going to let you know right off the bat that I am furious. I am absolutely furious. I think the man should be put in jail or shot or something similar to that, because he actually has done horrible things. And, there are people who have died, I believe. I've seen a couple of stories of people who have died, and one was somebody who killed somebody because of this. And I think he should be dealt with appropriately because, you know, not only did he make millions of dollars, but anyway, that's just, is anybody going to argue with me about this?
Well, the Bible says that in the last days there will be false prophets, and I think Harold Camping has clearly fallen into that category of being a false prophet. And as one, who's listened to his family radio open forum time, gosh, going back to the late 80s when I was commuting to Corvallis to finish my bachelor's degree. Sometimes I would be there late and I would be driving back on the freeway and I would listen to his program, and he definitely knows his Bible backwards and forwards, upside and down. And it's really sad to see someone with so much biblical knowledge to be, you know, drawing a line in the sand and saying this is the day. But, you know, he did come out of seclusion on Tuesday, yesterday, and he said that it dawned on him after a very difficult weekend that instead of the biblical rapture in which the faithful are going to be swept up into the heavens, May 21st had instead been a quote-unquote spiritual judgment day, which places the entire world under Christ's judgment. And so he says that on October 21st, our planet is going to be completely destroyed. And because God's judgment and salvation were completed on Saturday, he says there's no point continuing to warn people about it. So now his family radio network is just going to play Christian music and programs until the final end on October 21st.
And speaking of radio network, if I can jump in here for just one moment.
Sure.
Before we get into our topics hot and heavy, first of all, let's once again give out our contact information so people can join the program here.
721-9887.
That's 646-721-9887. You can try our brand new chat room at www.krbnradio.com. Go over there, try it out. You do not need an account to contribute to the show. Let us know how well it works. Get over there and try it. If you are... We also have the regular Blog Talk Radio chat room opened up right now also. Again, if you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, you can just click on live chat now. You can also contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and by email at talk@krbnradio.com. So the first half of the program, we're going to be talking about the apocalypse or the rapture, as the Cliff and Cindy got into. Second half, Oregon is considering increasing their speed limit to the speed of the rest of the nation to about 70-75 miles an hour. And first, I got a What the Heck Are They Thinking segment, and then I'll turn it back over to Cliff and go have some fun with a dentist.
All right.
So here we go with the audio.
You have got to be kidding me. What the heck were they thinking? Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
And this week's award once again goes out to the Oregon Legislature, which is always known for a good laugh, passes House Bill 3457 by a 21-6 vote, which now heads to the governor's desk. This bill would create the much-needed exception to the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act to allow actors performing on stage, in motion pictures, or on television to carry or smoke a lighted smoking instrument or device as long as the instrument or device does not contain tobacco. The really sad thing about all this is that the House and Senate met 12 times to discuss this bill. But then again, these are the same people whose first order of business at the new legislature was to vote to make the border collie the state dog. And finally, ponder this thought. With tornadoes touching down in Oklahoma, Missouri, and Texas in recent days, could you imagine the panic that would happen if they had occurred on the day in which Harold Camping predicted the rapture? Just a thought. This is Robin for KRBN Internet News Talk Radio, and back to you in the studio.
I've got a real good question. If it can be lit, but it can't have tobacco in it, what can it have in it? That's almost scarier than tobacco.
I think that they're talking about steam or something. But, yeah, you make a very good point, Cliff. There are some non-tobacco products that you can smoke.
I remember when I was 8, I tried smoking newspapers. That's horrible. Let me tell you from experience. But...
That's a visual I don't want to go.
Yeah, really. I mean, that was just ridiculous. But
I tried a blackberry bush stem.
Really?
The old ones that are dried up. A bunch of my friends, we'd light it up because it had a, you know, hole in the middle of it, so you could draw air pretty good, but you made it sick.
Yeah, all it did was turn your lips black.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually pretty smart. You got the, you don't have to roll anything. You don't have to do anything. You just light up the stem.
It worked.
It worked. But it made you sick, you see.
Yeah.
And what did we learn from doing that?
To smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, so put a cigarette at the end of the blackberry. Anyways, folks, 646-721-9887. I'm going to turn it over to Cliff and open the gate because I know these guys are just biting at the bit to get started. So here, but don't. You know, but feel free to call in. If you've never called a talk show before, this is an excellent time to do it, 646-721-9887. We promise we won't bite much, and it is kind of fun. So call us with your opinion.
Well, there's lots of things to talk about today. This rapture thing, as I said before at the beginning of the show, and by the way, we'll have a good time, Robin. I'm sure you will.
thank you. I'll think about you when he's poking me with that needle.
Yeah. Well, at least...
Laugh gas. Only way to go in the dentist office.
And at least he's not doing like me. I went on Monday and I got poked in the eye with a needle, not in the mouth.
Ew.
I have had an operation on Monday on my eye. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Back to the rapture thing. As I say, I'm just absolutely furious about this guy because, again, he should be put in jail and left there forever. Of course, he's 85 or something like that years old, so it's a little late now. But it's just, I think it's absolutely just horrible that he should be allowed to get away with this, especially since now he made a lot of money on this. He maintains, of course, it's all for his network, and he doesn't get any of it at all, but that's a bunch of bunk. I'm sure he did. But Not thousands of people sold everything they have and gave millions of dollars to this church, if you wish. He bought 5,000 billboards, spent millions of dollars informing everybody about this whole thing, only to find out, of course, that it didn't happen. And then all he does is say, "I'm sorry." Or I don't think he even said, "I'm sorry." He just said, it was a spiritual thing and not the real thing. And the real thing is going to happen October 21st. So he names another date. As the Saturday night church lady will say, how convenient. You can just move it to a different time and date. But I'm really, what is our government supposed to be doing if it's not protecting us from people like him, and they aren't doing that? There is a point where I don't think religion should be given carte blanche to ruin people's lives the way that he did. I mean, I can't think of anybody who's in any religion has done anything worse, and some of them end up in jail. So,
I think he has mental health issues. He has some mental health issues there too. I can see it. It just resembles a lot of other individuals I've come across in the spiritual realm. He's just he's got some issues there other than spiritual issues.
Well, they lock up other people when they're crazy.
Well, this is where you the unintended consequences, the separation of church and state, how the government says, okay, we don't want any more religion in the public square. And so kind of a detente is, okay, well, then keep the long arm of government out of church operations. And in many regards, Harold Camping's Family Radio is like a ministry, only it doesn't have four walls of a church. It's over the radio.
Well, from what I understand, this is a rather large radio. He's got, 68 radio stations, and he's got a shortwave system with several stations on that and a couple of television stations. It's a pretty large wall-less church, if you wish. But the thing that gets to me is, this is not the first time he's done this before. And how often are we going to let him do this and get away with it? Now we're talking about October 21st, and he says that that's going to happen. How many people are going to get taken into that one too? I mean, we do have a lot of unrest. We have earthquakes, and we have fires and tornadoes and everything going on right now. And I suppose that could be interpreted, I guess. I mean, that's what he's doing, is interpreting everything, isn't he?
Well, he definitely has his own methodology of what he thinks is coming. But, the vast majority of Christians around the world have gone back to that passage in Matthew that says only God knows the day. Jesus doesn't even know the day. That was his own words in the Gospel of Matthew. Is, only the Father knows. I don't even know.
Yeah.
So, and I think most people, and this is the really sad part for me about this, is that, like I said, someone like Harold Camping, who knows the Bible so well, has left out the most important part of his message. I mean, his whole message was about Judgment Day. And, by doing that, in a sense, he's quantified heaven and said only these people are going to heaven. And so by doing that, he's kind of taken away the focus of what Christianity is all about, which is developing and sustaining this personal relationship with Jesus. And he's played into the world. There's very few people in the world, unless they're like on the upper end of the glasses full optimism scale. But everybody in the world realizes that things are bad. And if you've lived long enough, they're not only bad, but they're just getting worse. And wouldn't it be nice if we can all wake up one morning and realize that we're in heaven and we're not in this really awful world anymore? And playing to that place in our hearts where we just want to escape this place to a better place, an eternal place where there is no sickness, there is no hate and war and all that stuff. That is what fueled Howard Camping's Judgment Day scenario.
Well, according to what I've been able to read, Camping himself believes in annihilationism, which is a view that those who are not saved will simply cease to be conscious rather than spend eternity in hell. Those who were unsaved and died prior to May 21st will not be affected by or experience the rapture or the end of the world. By the way, he's moved the end of the world to October 21st, which is Kim Kardashian's birthday, which is really important to know. But he believes in annihilationism. He's just making up things. He's not. Where's that in the Bible?
I'm going to let Bradley field that one.
Sorry.
That one's not in the Bible. And
yeah.
I just, being a pastor for almost 15 years now, I never even heard of the guy.
Well, that's it. Neither have I. And even though he did do this thing in 94, I had never heard of him. The family radio thing, I have heard of that. I've never listened to it. I went to their website. It's a very nice website, by the way. But then... there is a very good reason why it's a very nice website. The man raised $18 million in 2009. You should be able to do the best website in the world for that kind of price, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah.
And over the time he's been on the air, he's raised over $80 million. Now, that's a lot of money. That is a lot of money. And he says he doesn't have any, that he's put it all back into this building, this whatever it is that he's built. He says that by the time October 21st rolls around, he's only going to have $10 left. And
no, brother.
That I find this very disturbing, very disturbing. I understand what you're saying, Cindy, about the government trying to get into things, but there is a point where they could come up with concrete reasons, and it has nothing to do with religion for what he's done and what he's done to people. Because, the simple fact, he's built to an awful lot of people out of every dime they've ever had. And he's also said he's not even considering giving any of it back. That's not going to happen. That they gave it to him in, I guess you could say, good faith or something. And since they went ahead and gave it to him, he's not even considering giving it any of it back. He's going to use it to continue on. He says that he won't tell us how much he actually made or raised from this particular thing alone, but he's told us somewhat of what he's spent, $5,000 to billboards and millions of dollars on just all kinds of ways of trying to convince people that this was going to happen. And everybody's calling him a huckster. They're calling him a marketing. He's got to be almost a marketing genius, because who else can have the whole world paying attention to what you're saying? I mean, that's...
Well, first of all, I would to talk to the person, i.e. Cliff, who thinks that we should not make a law every time something bad happens to protect ourselves from ourselves.
Right.
These people bought into one man's prophecy. And all around the world, all around our country, they said, we believe what this man is saying. That is individuals' right to do that. And every day people buy property without researching it and then discover, oh my gosh, I've spent $500,000 on a house that is in a floodplain, and my flood insurance is going to be 100 times more than what I anticipated. I can't afford this house. Take me out of the floodplain, Lane County government. It's just, there was some similar land use issues about people that will invest their life savings in a property or in a business. That happens every single day, and it doesn't make headlines. The reason that we were finding out about this is because this was a sensational story, and so the media is going to be all over it, because that's one of the seven traditional news values, is oddity. And so in this particular case, yeah, I agree with you, Cliff. It's very sad that people were that gullible. But, I put a lot of stock in the red letters that are in my Bible, and if Christ says, I don't even know when the end of the world is going to be, then that is what's going to determine whether or not I'm going to put a lot of faith in a, a, someone, a prophet, if you will, that's saying the end of the world is coming on this particular day, at this particular time.
There's so many of these preachers, they interpret the Bible, though. They don't just take it for what it says. And, he kind of was one who sort of indicated that that's what he did, that he took the Bible for what it said. I mean, that's what he preaches, is the Bible. But then he's still an interpreter. He's taken it and interpreted it in this case, and he's still doing it again for the October 21st date. I mean, he's interpreting it, and people are listening to him rather than just going to it and reading it and making up their own mind. I mean, I agree with you. If you read it down there and it says in black and white or black and red or whatever colors you want, that nobody knows, absolutely nobody knows, I would kind of take that as a hint. But he sat down and he's looked it all up and done the math wrong, mind you, but he did the math. And
he's just heaping more coals upon his head. He's inducing more judgment on himself from God, and that's the only thing that we need to be concerned about, is God judging him, reading our Bible, and looking at the truths and not listening to false prophets like him, and egg in the face on all the Christians who can't read their own Bible and rely on these people to be their spiritual leader instead of the Bible.
Well, that's it. Most Christians rely on some spiritual leader of some sort, and he spent an awful lot of years trying to gain some sort of credibility, and I would have think he lost it in 94, but he's still going at it, trying again. So it's a little distraught. I'm very upset. I'm just absolutely very upset. I don't even believe in the Bible. I don't even believe in religion, but I'm still very upset that somebody can dupe this many people. And when asked if he's going to give the money back, he says, people cope. He says, job, housing, investment losses during the economic decline, people lost a lot of money, and now the average family radio listener has lost a lot of money, but he's not interested in giving any of it back at all.
Well, that's probably because he spent most of it on billboards and newspaper full-page advertising in journalism real estate like the New York Times, the USA Today. That is not cheap to take out a full-page ad in those publications.
Well,
so
he did add to the economy, though. So,
well, that's true. he gave a lot of people a job. He gave a lot of people the advertising industry, like you say. You made a lot of money off of him, and so there is a point. It's just I feel really bad about all the people who, because there are people who gave everything they had for this, and. And they've just lost it entirely. Now there's something I've got a thing here that says prepare for the coming tribulation in which God will rain down judgment on the world for 7 years. Well,
that's in Revelation.
Yeah, so that doesn't take us to October 21st. I mean, when does the 7 years start? So
well, that's the whole thing about the Book of Revelation, is that it's a mystery. And but there are anchor points within the Book of Revelation that tie into other prophecies and other books of the Bible, such as the Book of Daniel, for example. And so last year, one of our local churches here in Cottage Grove, the pastor spent months going through the Book of Revelation and kind of unlocking some of those mysteries that to someone just reading it, it appears to be more symbolic and allegorical.
Well, I think possibly one of the biggest problems is that we're not translating the Bible properly. We're not translating it from the Hebrew. We're taking the translations that are in there, and they aren't correct. One of the things that this guy said Monday, he talked, and he said the rapture did come. It was invisible.
Yeah.
And on October 21st will really be the end of the world. And so, I mean, I can't imagine, I guess I can, but I'm sorry I can imagine anybody believing a word he says from this point on. I think I'm with you at this point, Bradley, that he's got a screw loose somewhere and he's not giving up on it.
Yeah.
He's nothing but a huckster at this particular point. But that's the thing that upsets me. He did a very good job of it. He spent what since 1958 or something like that. He's had this radio show and this radio ministry.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
He's been 40 years convincing people that he knows what he's talking about, and then in 1994 he proved that he didn't, and now he's proved it again. So I hope a whole lot of people, in fact, if not all, will catch on and perhaps listen to their own heart and read the book themselves. You can't depend. There's no one you can depend on. You've got to sit down and research it yourself. It's as simple as that. And I can't imagine any other way of making a decision on something that's going to affect the rest of my life.
Well, one of my favorite authors is Tim LaHaye, and he has like Carol Camping. He's another person that has spent years and years and years, decades of his life, studying and analyzing the Word of God. And he is the co-author of that really popular Left Behind book series that came out in the 90s. And he partnered with Jerry Jenkins, who was a writer. And Tim provided the biblical support for this fictional account of the rapture and what happens in the 7 years of tribulation. And what they did in partnership there was kind of paint a fictional account of what it might be like. But they never said this is what it's going to be like. And Tim LaHaye was quoted here recently calling Camping's prediction not only bizarre, but 100% wrong. And he cited that Bible verse, Matthew 24:36, but about that day or hour, no one knows except God. And that's Jesus' words to his disciples. Well, Harold Camping said that Jesus was speaking in the present tense at that time, but now that 2,000 years have passed, he believes there is a way for the Bible to reveal its secrets that the end of the world is now.
Well, that's interesting. How can that change? Because the Bible hasn't changed, supposedly.
No, but his mathematical methodology of going all the way back to the flood and calculating days and years and that type of thing, that is what gave some legitimacy. That and the Da Vinci Code movie, where it says that there are certain secrets in the Bible that if you read things backwards or turn things around, you'll find hidden messages. And I've never put a lot of stock in that. My faith is pretty much a simple one.
Well, yeah.
But I do believe with all my heart that with the world in its current conditions, and the fact that the state of Israel has been reestablished, that there are a number of end-time prophecies that have come true, and there's only a couple more left, that I'm hoping that I'm of the generation that does indeed see the second coming of Christ in my lifetime. And there are millions of Christians that believe the same way that I do, that, you know, this is, if you're sitting on the fence and you haven't acknowledged God's invitation for you to become one of his kids and to spend an eternity with him, because Christ has indeed paid the price for your sin, and now you can be in the presence of a holy God because of this unholy, you know, fallen nature.
Are you there? Hello? We seem to have lost him.
I'm here.
Another part of the Bible, it says it comes as a thief in the night. And so we're not going to know the day or the hour, and it's going to come when we least expect it.
Well, that's obvious. And the thing that gets to me, though, even, and I understand what you're saying, but I think we still don't know, and we don't have any idea, because we aren't even translating the Bible's words correctly. For example, in Hebrew, the word the word hell is never in the Bible. It's never there. If you transferred the word if you translate the word Sheol or whatever it is, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Sheol. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't translate to hell. It translates to grave or dead. And so the word hell is never ever mentioned in the Bible, technically, not in the original Bible. So and there are many words that we're not translating properly, and so we don't know how long 7,000 years or 2,000 years or whatever is, because we don't know how long the year was at that particular time, and so you know, we don't have writing to. Written books to figure it out. It was all passed down by word of mouth and then written down later. So I'm really skeptical about this whole thing. And I would rather see us live and try to live a what I want to call it, a good life. That's all I'm going to use the word, just good life, all your life, rather than waiting until last minute when you think it's going to end and do something about it. That's where I think religion has a use, and that's making people think about what they're doing and to try to be a little more unto my religion, do unto others, than trying to do something special at the very end and worrying about it then. It's too late as far as I'm concerned. Anyway.
Well, I know that every person that goes to Bible college that is going to go into the preaching ministry field is required to take Greek and Hebrew classes. And I know that if you open up the front of almost any Bible today, no matter what translation, and there's a Baskin-Robbins translation of number of modern-day translations of the ancient text. But if you look at the front of it, it will show you all of these different Bible scholars that are scholars in Hebrew and in Greek, and going all the way back to Armenian and Sanskrit languages. And, you know, so I believe that the Bible is always subject to interpretation, but every serious person that with some scholarly background that has attempted to discredit the Bible has ended up in their passion of that pursuit has ended up becoming a believer. So,
what are they trying to discredit? I'm not trying to discredit the actual Bible itself. I'm trying to discredit the one that everybody uses, and that's the King James Version. We're just parroting his ideas.
That is not true, Cliff.
Then why did he rewrite it?
Because prior to that, it was the Roman Catholic priest that had control of the Bible, and you had, after the Dark Ages, you had pretty much an illiterate society, and it wasn't until 1511 that that the Gutenberg Bible was printed in Germany, and people began reading the Bible for themselves again, rather than just relying on priests to be able to say what is in it.
Well, thank God for that. In my opinion.
And today, that's why archaeology is so so important in the Middle East, is because they have uncovered different finds that reiterate that the Bible is what it is. And the most significant were all of those Dead Sea Scrolls in pottery jars that were stored, that were original texts from the book of Isaiah. And when you compare that to what the current Bible is, it's almost word for word the same. And that discovery back in the 40s and the establishment of the State of Israel are two very, very important positions that Christians point to say, you know, if God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah in the Old Testament because they were that wicked, how much more wicked are we today than that? And it is only God's mercy that he wants that no one should perish for on an eternal scale, that he's holding back his judgment. so that more people will have the opportunity to accept his invitation through Christ to be adopted into his eternal family. So that's my Bible Christian Andy lesson for today. But that is, you know, those are the cornerstones by which I have built my faith.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot to look into, and again, I agree with you. I still think it comes down to you need to read it, and you need to pay attention, and you need to make your decisions instead of relying on a preacher, because preachers can come up with all kinds of different ideas. Many of them, I'm sure, are very sincere and do try to put the point across. I know some preachers, I've been around preachers, for example, that read the Bible in the church, and then they'd sit and discuss it and come up with a consensus of the people involved, the congregation, I guess you'd call them, as to what they think the Bible means. And then, of course, it's always convenient to have someone who has literally studied it, like you say, for years, who could guide you along the way. But you don't need to take what they say verbatim, and you don't need to take it as the absolute gospel. But use your own mind. We're all given a mind, and hopefully most of us, it's good enough to be able to work around something like that, rather than just blindly following someone else. My disturbance with this gentleman is that he has spent so much time and so much money developing a blind followership.
Yeah.
That's really what something should be done about that. I mean, I don't know what you can do, but there are laws that I'm sure he's broken that need to be enforced somewhere along the line. I'd have to look into it, and not being a lawyer, I probably wouldn't know, but there's got to be something there that
I think if there was, by now there would have been some, you know, very aggressive, greedy lawyer that would be jumping on a class action lawsuit against him.
As much as I'm not really enthralled with greedy lawyers, in this case I'd like to see a couple of them come forward. So I agree with you. So maybe you're right. Maybe there's nothing you can do. I mean, he's pretty well covered his basis.
I mean, we have laws on the financial industry of, like, you know, the Madoffs and what they can do in terms of breaking laws, but I don't think we have all that many laws on how people invest their money in religious activities.
Well, and the problem is he may be significant, you know, considered, he may be proper. I mean, he may be putting all this money back into his religion. It's just that it's kind of sad that this is the result.
Right. But that's my point, is I don't think that he's broken any laws, because the money that was given for the purpose of buying up these expensive media opportunities, and that the money that came in, I'm hoping that's what's going to happen, is an audit of his books shows that he did not, you know, enrich himself. From what I saw on TV, you know, there was a camera outside of his home. He lives in a modest home. He's, you know, he's not like the Trinity Broadcasting Network. I mean, his radio studio is pretty small and unadorned, and they've made it very clear it's between like a pawn shop and a bookstore or something, and it's just a little storefront. So the man clearly is not like a Jim Baker, where he's just enriching his own life. I think in that particular case, that added to his credibility as to why people did send money for Family Radio to be able to do this worldwide outreach. I mean, that has to have cost millions and millions of dollars to do that. I don't believe that he personally enriched himself off of that money. That's where the difference is, and why he probably hasn't broken any laws.
Well, he did say in an interview, he says, how much, the question was, how much money has Family Radio raised as a result of this campaign, and do you intend to return it? And he says no, He says, listeners have given because of their desire to propagate the gospel, have given to Family Radio because we can do this more efficiently. As to will we give it back? No, the money is still going out. We're not out of business. We've learned that we still have another 5 months to go. And so he says, although he's not going to buy more billboards and advertising, it is unclear somewhat what the donations that are coming in still will be spent on. He says donations don't go directly toward the station's operations. So at this particular point, nobody's too sure exactly where the money is going to be spent. Of course, how much money is still going to be coming in? We've gone past May 21st and nothing has happened. So it'd be interesting to see. I would be curious to know if people are still going to be sending him money or if they've said all they got pretty much at this particular point. Anyway, I guess I'm not quite so mad as I was when I started, but I'm still not really convinced that I'm happy about all this. That's for sure. It's
just, I just had a conversation with some Jehovah's Witness people.
Oh, that was why our home security alarm went off.
Yeah, that was quite interesting. So they were giving me their own wanted to give me their own prophecy literature, and I refused very politely, and
so
they went.
Do they have an end of the world coming soon too?
Oh yeah, but it's not. They stick more to the Bibles that nobody knows. They do have some variations, but nothing like camping.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to be a part of a religion that gave a date, because you just can't tell. And having egg on your face is one thing, but this is the whole face covered with egg. I mean, he really did it. I'm telling
you. Yeah.
So he's not the only one who's done it, though. I mean, and he's not even, this is not the first time he did it. So I guess it's sort of weird, sir. So whatever. I don't know. Anybody else got anything to say? I mean, I think we probably...
Well, the Bible says many will be deceived if that's possible. And it's talking about the believers. And there will be some professed believers that will be fooled into believing that man knows a little bit more than God. And that's where the danger lies. And if you stick right between the covers, the front and the back cover of the Bible, you won't have to worry about all this other stuff. That's my final word.
Well, I have to agree with that. I mean, and read what it says, not what you think it says.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
I hear people all the time trying to interpret what people say to them. Well, you know, read between the lines is the big thing, you know, or what is he really saying? Well, stop that. Accept what he said, not what you think he's saying. Because if you go for what you think he's saying, 95% of the time you're going to be wrong.
Yep. Amen.
That's true.
Well, we've had our religious training for this morning, huh?
Yeah.
If you wish. Well, anyway, what was our second?
The increased speed limit in Oregon.
Now, see that? Somebody tell me about that, because I didn't read about that.
I haven't either.
Well, this was Robin's topic, but I do know that a number of states throughout the country, for instance, like Nevada and Wyoming, prior to the, this is just a little historical background, prior to the the Arab oil embargo in 1973, many of the states in the West that have wide open spaces, they're not congested like freeways in Southern California or along the Eastern Seaboard, they didn't have any speed limits posted. You just had, and Oregon was one of those states that it said that you just needed to drive appropriately with the conditions of the road or something like that. There wasn't a posted numeral speed limit. And then the federal government, to try and it was some scientific study showed that a reduced speed burned less gasoline. And so as a way of slowing America down to save and conserve on the use of imported oil, that they began posting speed limits and telling states like Nevada and Wyoming that in Oregon that did not have a posted speed limit. If you want to continue to receive federal highway transportation dollars, you will post a speed limit. And so that's when you started seeing 70 mile per hour speed limits posted. And then you would see occasionally these horrific crashes that would cause this, you know, this heartbreaking loss of life. And so the national, Highway Safety Transportation, there's a big acronym for it. They began a push to lower those higher upper end speed limits of 70 and 80 miles an hour down to 55 miles per hour. And that's kind of how we ended up with almost a standardized 55 mile per hour speed limit that nobody was really paying attention to, because when you're in wide open spaces and you don't have law enforcement for miles, people tend to travel at higher speeds. And so in recent years, I know since the 90s, there have been legislation introduced into Oregon's legislature that have asked for a higher speed limit on rural stretches of highway, like the highway that goes across east to west to Oregon from Bend to Burns and from Burns to Ontario. I forget the name of that one. I think it's Highway 20. There, you know, those wide open spaces, they wanted a higher speed limit. And so Oregon did increase to 65 miles per hour. And now there's a legislation to up it to 70 miles per hour. So that's kind of the background that I have on that. And I guess my question to you, Cliff, is what is your opinion on increased speed limits?
Well, you know, I'm looking at a list here. I just went online to bring up a list of what states have what speed limits, and very few of them have the 55 mile an hour speed limit left. Most of them are around 65 and 70 at this particular point in time. Oregon is one of the few that actually has a 55 mile an hour speed limit on its main rural interstates and such are 65. But the cities is 55, and the only thing I concern myself about is here we're raising the speed limit at the very time that the gasoline is going up so much higher. How much difference? I understand that there's significantly difference in how much gas your vehicle uses between the 55 and the 70 mile an hour speed limits. So that would be the only concern I have. I've driven in California a lot, and I don't find there are more accidents in California than there are in Oregon, but there are also, what, eight times more cars are in California than there are in Oregon. So I don't think percentage-wise there's any more. I think the worst state I've ever been in was Massachusetts, and that had nothing to do with the speed limit. It had to do with these roundabout things that keep running into each other on these intersections that go around in circles.
Oh, roundabouts, yes.
Yeah. And now they're bringing those here. So I would be more upset about those than I would be about raising the speed limit, to be very honest with you. I can't see a real problem other than, you know, the price of gas is getting insane. And so unless I can get an electric car, and of course electric cars can go really fast, but and nowadays they can do things with cars to keep them from running into each other. I mean, if they can build a car that you can just take your hands off the wheel and it'll park itself, you can certainly build a car that's going to slow down if it gets too close to another vehicle. I mean, of course, when you're doing 70 miles an hour, it's going to have to slow down real fast. So I don't know how practical that is either. But I personally don't see any problem of going to 70 miles an hour. I just don't. Well, yes, I do. Because of what I was just going to say, anybody else can drive 70 miles an hour if they want to. I don't think I want to because I don't want to use the gas. On the same token, if I'm out there at 55 miles an hour and they're at 70, that is a hazard.
So yeah.
There comes a point where I think we'd be better off still at the 70, at the 55. I don't see getting a lot sooner by doing 15 miles more.
Well, I know, having been born and raised in Louisiana and having spent now the better part of my life in Oregon, the road trips that I've made between those two states across the great wild open spaces of rural Arizona and New Mexico and, God forbid, Texas. Texas just lasts forever. And so along some of those roads, I can see where a 75 or 80 mile an hour speed limit would be appropriate. Unless, of course, it's snowing or it's pouring down rain or, you know, there's been an accident up ahead and everybody's kind of creeping along waiting to get by it. I mean, this is going back to our early conversation, common sense. There's a common sense factor that needs to be figured in here. But you're right, looking at this Wikipedia map of all the different states and what their speed limits, the lowest speed limit now is 60 miles an hour, and that's in the state of Hawaii, which has pretty limited real estate for you to be zipping about.
Yeah.
So that's kind of understandable.
Yeah. Well,
but,
oh, and I did drive in Germany too, on the Autobahn, where there is no speed limit whatsoever, and that didn't really turn out to be a problem. I mean, they have a strict rule that if you're going to be driving slower, you stay to the right. If you're going to go fast, you stay to the left. But you don't drive on the left unless you're passing someone, And of course, there are some people who drive on the left because they're going so fast they're passing everyone.
Mm-hmm. They generally don't have cars there that are pieces of junk either. Their cars are much more taken care of, and they have cars that can go those speeds. In the United States, we don't have those cars that travel that consistently. You can see some of those that are smoking and barely running, and that's one of my concerns, is the speed limit going up, is a lot of the cars that we have on our roads are not able to do that.
Well, I don't know.
Bad tires, it's just not a good thing. Speed, I believe speed kills. I stick with that.
And that's and Governor Kitzhaber here in Oregon, who's in his second tour of duty as governor, is a emergency room technician, emergency room physician, I mean. And that was one of his big, he said he wasn't going to sign in his first two terms, every time it was introduced to increase the speed limit in Oregon from 55 to 65, he refused to sign it and vetoed it for that reason. He saw too many people coming in the ER from car accidents that in good conscience, he could not sign their death warrant. That was something like his quote. And then he was out of office for two terms. And during that time, we got our speed limit increased to 65. And now there's currently legislation that wants to raise it to 70. But I know driving the 20, 25 miles between Cottage Grove and the metro area of Eugene and Springfield, it's pretty much there aren't very many bends in the road. It's pretty much a straight shot on flat, level ground, and you drive 60 or 65 miles an hour in the right lane, and people are blowing your doors off doing 70 and 80 miles per hour.
Yeah, and the thing, they're doing it already, so.
Yes, and so that is why they're saying if you increase it to 70 miles per hour, then the average speed will be 80 miles an hour for those people that have, like, radar detectors or something. But the sad part in Oregon, it's true, I think, across the country right now, is all of the state and local governments that are barely trying to pass balanced budgets by June 30th every year, that I know for Lane County, the lion's share of our general fund pays for public safety services. And the sheriff's office takes a big chunk of that for law enforcement as well as for corrections. And because of that, they're having to trim back those big budgets, and that's taking fewer patrol officers off the road on a 24/7, 365 basis than what it was 30 years ago when I first got here. We had a state police substation about every 25 miles along Interstate 5. And now we have one in Roseburg and one in Springfield. And that's like a 60 or 70 mile spacing. And because of that, we have a lot of people that are choosing to exceed the speed limit because they know that it's not going to be as heavily enforced unless it's like Memorial Weekend and the feds kick in some seven flags or whatever it is where they do put extra patrol cars when the most people are on the road to try and keep the speeds down and keep people safer.
Well, it seems to me like that when there's more people on the road, they're going to be handing out more tickets. And why isn't this paying for itself? I mean, there's where's the money going if it's not to... Because these tickets are not cheap. I've not gotten a ticket for a long time, but I understand for most people, they're getting pretty expensive. So where's all this money going? Of course, it's getting more and more expensive to hire a police officer because they have to be more trained and they have to know more about what's going on. Anyway, you were starting to say...
Well, I was going to say that in the mid-1990s, the little city of Cobourg, a little rural town just north of Eugene, they were adding to the revenue of their city police department by having a Cobourg city cop keep the speeds down just north of Eugene, and both coming and going. And that became a known speed trap for years. And finally, enough people complained and got a couple of Eugene area legislators on board, and they have now passed a law that says that city patrol officers, it limits the amount of time they can spend on the freeway, or it limits the amount of revenue, or caps the amount of revenue that they can earn off the freeway that they're adjacent to. And so, you know, I wasn't on board with that. You know, I don't think it's, if you know that there's going to be a police officer there, you are going to do what you're supposed to do. And so the fact that it slowed down traffic coming into Eugene from southbound from Portland, and it slowed it on northbound going to Portland, that was okay with me. And the fact that this enterprising small city police department was making money to help support their local crime prevention and their police department. I mean, that sounded like a win-win to me.
I would have to disagree with that, because if they've taken police off of their streets that are supposed to be protecting their citizens and putting them out on the freeway just to make a few bucks, then they're letting their citizens down. They're letting their citizens go unprotected, and that's not the name of the game. I mean, that's why we have separate police departments for separate places. The freeway is a totally separate department than the city, and if the city has got so many police officers that they need to put them out there to support them, then maybe they got too many police officers or something. But I find that a problem myself. I don't see, and I understand what you're saying. It'd be nice if we could have enough state patrol officer type officers out there to control it, but not taking city officers off of the streets to do it.
Could I have the floor for a minute?
Yes.
Could you mention the phone number, please, real quick? And then I have a blog talk person here that had the question or a comment. So if you give the phone number, I'll take the next part.
646-721-9887.
Great. We have a blog talker who lives in St. Louis, and she says there's way too many camera tickets there. And her point is that the prices of the tickets, they don't cover the prices of the camera systems. It's a good point.
I don't know what kind of an opinion I have about these camera. Are these? I guess I would depend on where these are. Just at stoplights or stop signs? It's where they have the cameras.
Yeah, in the cities, the heavy intersections and.
See, I don't see a problem with that myself. If you're not doing anything wrong, and if you are stopping and turning in the proper time and that sort of thing, I would be all for that. As far as how much the camera systems cost and whether they shouldn't be that expensive. Nowadays, you can buy a halfway decent camera for almost nothing.
She says they're all over.
Well, yeah, they are.
Cameras are all over the place.
And they were primarily installed because people were running red lights and causing fatalities. And so the whole idea was that the camera was tied into the computer system that runs the traffic light so that at the time it turns yellow, the camera takes pictures of cars that continue through the intersection on a yellow light and on a red light.
I see nothing wrong with that myself. I'm sorry. I mean,
that was the original purpose. And then Portland installed them about 10 or 15 years ago. And it takes a picture of the front of the car that has the license plate on it. And then in the mail, you get a ticket that says, you know, on this day at this time, this car that's registered to you ran this red light at this intersection, and you need to appear in court or pay this X dollar fine. And so it was challenged that was an invasion of privacy, that not having a human there to verify that was the driver of that car. So, and some of those litigation matters were resolved that said, yes, this is in the safety of the public's best interest, and the cameras get to stay.
Well, you know, I would probably be more inclined to believe the camera than a police officer, because a police officer could possibly get it wrong, could possibly have something against you. A camera is not going to hold a grudge.
No, but those cameras are used more than just traffic.
And that's where you get into the invasion of privacy issues, right, Bradley?
Yeah.
Well, of course, you got to consider, you know, according to what I'm an avid TV watcher and all of these crime shows on television, and they've it's quite serious. They've got cameras everywhere. I don't think they're all as good as they say they are on television, but the thing is, you can be picked up on a camera. Almost every store has them at the front door to find out what's going on. They have them inside to find out what's going on. I can see somewhat an invasion of privacy to a certain extent. If you're out in the public, I don't know how private you're going to consider you're supposed to be, but I personally find, again, I don't mind the cameras. I'm not going to be doing something out there I don't want people to see.
I don't either, especially when I'm going to, like, for instance, the Walmart here in Cottage Grove. I like the idea that they have all those cameras in the parking lot and then in the store, because it keeps you safer.
Right, right. Sometimes I wonder how legitimate those are. I mean, those cameras are a long ways away. Can they get something that's detailed enough to really show anything? But and some stores, of course, you go in there and you see all these cameras all over the place, and half of them are fake. But you don't know which ones are and which ones aren't. So consequently, hopefully, you actually act accordingly and don't do anything wrong. That would be the logical move.
Well, if they can pinpoint very clearly a person's face from satellite in space, you better believe they have some cameras that can do that here.
Well, I understand that they have the cameras that can do that, but are we paying that kind of money for them, and do we need to? I mean, with all the cameras, it's gotten to the point, it's just unbelievable the number of cameras there are out there. Every store, every building, everything has cameras on it. I can remember back, I'm an old internet person, and I remember back in the 90s when I was watching the internet, and there was a camera downtown in Los Angeles at Hollywood and Vine or something like that was going, and you could see what was going on down there, till of course people got upset because it's invading their privacy, and they're out on the street and maybe doing something they shouldn't be doing, and the camera picks it up, and 50 million people around the world can watch them. So I think that's good myself. I'll invade their privacy. If you have privacy, you know, there becomes a point, because one of the things that you mentioned was that these cameras can take a picture of the driver inside the car. Now, we're all of a sudden inside a private vehicle. But of course, the veil has windows all around. So how much privacy can you expect to literally have? That's I guess, the big question.
Well, if you're going to have a camera, my opinion is too, get a good one, because, you know, if you're going to catch a shoplifter, like, for instance, the Safeway here, my brother was investigating a shoplifting, and he couldn't see the perpetrator's face because the camera was so lousy.
Ah.
And so that's, hey, if you're going to get a good camera system in, get a good one. Spend it on and do it right the first time. Unlike the government, they like to do things over and over and over again.
And I will have to agree that it's interesting. I'm trying to look and see here. I think we have a caller. Let's find out if we do have a caller. Hi, this is Cliff, and you're on the air. How are you today? Are you there? Hello? Doesn't seem to be 229. Okay. I see a number there, and it's an Oregon number, but it's... We'll hang up and try again. Is anyone there listening? Hello? Testing? Okay. Well, if they don't go away, I'll try again in a minute. Maybe they just... We've been waiting so long that they went away from the phone or something, but do have somebody on the line there.
Yeah, I see one, 729-4394.
Oh, you don't want to give their phone number, but they just go off.
Well, I didn't give their area code, so.
Except that I did. Anyway, sorry about that. If you want to
Speaking of invasion of privacy.
Yeah. No kidding. I don't know. Cameras, really good cameras, and I used to sell stuff at the swap meet, and I can get a really decent camera that can show you pretty good stuff, believe it or not, for $25-$35, and you're not talking about big bucks, and if you get one that's twice as good as that for $50, that's going to give you a really good picture, and they also work very good in unbelievably low light. I couldn't believe that. So I have cameras in my house, as a matter of fact. So if you walk up here, you're going to have your privacy invaded. Sorry, but I want to know what's going on around my house. And I've done this for years. I've done this because quite often in the past I've lived alone, not at the moment, but I have lived alone. And people come way back in the 80s, I was told that there was some kids peeking around my house. So I set up cameras and tried to find out what was going on, and I caught them peeking around the house. And actually, they were quite interested in, I had a recording studio in the basement, and they were interested in that, and I became friends with them, and so it was no big thing. But I have had cameras in my house since then, because it's not that expensive. It just isn't that expensive anymore to do that. So I can see, but I agree with you, Bradley, that it would be good if they'd at least get something that was good enough to be able to make out what's going on.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that, when you put a camera up in a store or something like that and just let it sit there, I wonder how often they go up and maybe clean the lens. Maybe that's just a matter of dirt on the lens over a period of years that nobody's bothered to clean up, nobody even thinks about it. And there is a time when you should need to go up and actually clean the lens once in a while.
Well, let me tell you that if it involves revenue stream into a government entity that's cash strapped, that they will find time to get up there and make sure that they're getting the best possible information to be able to stand up in court.
I would say so, yes, but I don't know how concerned Safeway is about that. I don't know about that.
Well, listen, I did find what Robin was talking about. There's a pair of Republican state senators here in Oregon that have launched a new attempt to raise the speed limit on rural interstates in Oregon up to 75 miles per hour. And Senator Bruce Starr, who's a Republican from Hillsboro, and Jason Atkinson, who's a Republican from Central Point down in southern Oregon, they're trying to amend a bill sponsored by the city of Portland. That particular bill would allow the city to lower speed limits along neighborhood greenways in low traffic residential streets. So since the time has, this was last week. So now they're trying to amend it so that Oregon gets what it wants. But according to Senator Starr, he says when you've got people doing 70 already on Oregon highways, it seems like it's time for Oregon to join with the rest of the states in the West and raise the speed limit. And when you look on Wikipedia at that map of what the state speed limits are, Oregon is its little island in the sea of western states that has a 65-mile-an-hour speed limit.
It does on some of the rural roads. It is 55, too. You're right.
To me,
I guess to sum it up sort of, I don't care if they raise the speed limit. I mean, I don't really honestly believe that it's going to make a huge difference in the accidents, although some people say it does. I don't believe it. Of course, I am not a firm believer in seatbelts either, so that's nobody's been able to prove to me that that's the case. I mean, they cite numbers, but they don't get any, show me where they got them.
And well, the same argument that I heard when the 8 years that I was a county official in Salem, every time the legislature met, this was one of those perennial bills that got introduced by rural legislators on behalf of constituents that said, come on, get real. Everybody's driving 70 anyway. And the I see that the chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission, a citizens advisory board at the state level, Gail Ackerman, and she's been there forever, she noted that the commission has already been given the authority to raise the speed limit to 70 in legislation that was passed in 2003. But each year the commission has decided, after studying the idea, that it would lead to more deaths and serious injury. And frankly, she said, voting to raise the speed limit is voting to kill people, and it is voting to maim people for life. And it's that emotional plea that that is why Oregon is the only Western state that still has the lower speed limit.
Well,
last year, traffic deaths dropped both nationally and in Oregon. And Oregon safety officials say Oregon has been able to push its fatality levels below the national average in part by keeping speed limits down. But Senator Starr pointed to improved national statistics as a reason to join other Western states to support these increased speed limits.
See, I still have a nagging thing back in my mind. Is that why the accident rate is down, or is it because of some other thing? I mean, there's all kinds of, we don't have as many officers on the road as we're supposed to have or should have, and maybe that has a lot to do with what's going on too. So I don't know. I think, to be honest with you, leave well enough alone. Why spend the money on doing something different? We'd have to change all the signs, we'd have to do all kinds of stuff. It's going to cost a lot of money. Leave it alone. It ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, for some people that have to pay speed limit tickets for, there's some pretty rural stretches of limited access interstate highway in Oregon. Interstate 5 and Interstate 84. I mean, I don't see that raising it to 70 or 75 is going to make much difference there. As long as you're doing under the right conditions. And that's where the common sense part comes into. But, of course, Portland doesn't want their bill to get hung up over, the freeway speed limits. But the whole thing is that the legislature can pass this law to increase the speed limits, but the way that our government's structured, it's still the authority is with the Citizens Commission. And Senator Starr says, he's not interested, giving the commission's firm opposition to have that bill, leave it still in the commission's authority to raise it or not.
I don't know what to say about that. The cost of, see, we're in the position that our state is in at the moment, the cost to to raise it and change signs and do things like that is, I just think, prohibitive. I think we should just leave it well enough alone. And like you mentioned, the fact that if we change it to 75, then they're going to do 85 or 90. I think 75 is fast enough, and that's what they're doing now. So,
I think if they, you know, people did work more on common sense, it would help a lot. I mean,
we know
when somebody is late, the common sense usually goes out the window. I mean, I've driven with people lately that drive with one hand on the steering wheel all the time, and I was a school bus driver for a couple of years, and I went through a very vigorous training and learned a lot about how you hold on the steering wheel, and it makes a difference.
Yeah, I suppose it does. I'm unfortunately one of those that drives with one hand most of the time, to be honest with you. So I would, but I don't see it myself. I mean, the big difference between one and two hands, as long as you've got a good control over the vehicle. And nowadays with power steering the way it is, you do have a good control over the vehicle. And if the power steering goes out, it doesn't make any difference if you use two hands or not. So it doesn't work. So that's a consideration too. So,
well, if you have one hand on the wheel and something happens right away, you have less of a chance of getting your vehicle under control, because that second matters.
Yeah, I suppose it could. I suppose it could. And depending on what speed you're running at, if you're doing it 75 miles an hour, a lot can happen in a second.
Yeah.
It's amazing at how much distance you travel in just a matter of a second at 70 miles an hour. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know I keep hearing things like that it is drastic. So maybe it is a concern.
Then you have the tailgating, you know, the road rage tailgating.
Oh, my gosh, that is really awful.
Well, you know, the thing that gets to me, I mean, we can talk about speed limit and what difference that makes in deaths. We can talk about tailgating and what difference that makes in deaths. I want to talk about alcohol. That's where the deaths come in. I think that's my concern, is people driving while under the influence. And there's still an awful lot of that going on, and there's more deaths in that than anything else. So that,
yeah, and other drugs too.
Or yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I think alcohol is probably the worst, but you're right, other drugs have a problem too. But I tell you, this, nobody does anything about that. That's, oh, he was drunk. No big thing. He was drunk. All right, that is a big thing. And I get really upset about I really would love to go back to prohibition, to be honest with you. Everybody tells me it didn't work, but I think it did. It's just a couple of places that it didn't. And I've done a lot of research on, you know, big places where it didn't, with Chicago, and that's the biggest place. But then I have no love in my life for Chicago anyway. So that's another story. Anyway, so anything else anybody wants to bring up? We should mention something about Joplin. And the disasters and things that are going on there. There's poor people in Missouri. They're up to 125 now on the tornado that happened just a couple of days ago, and that's kind of sad to see what's going on. And I find it very interesting that this whole, what do they call it, this whole where they let the water out and flood down river of the valley down there and flood out all these people in order to keep the two major cities from flooding. And I'm amazed that these people in these smaller communities that are being flooded out are just accepting it. They know they're living.
Well, they have to, because they have built in a floodway since the 19th century, when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers began to put levees in to try and control the flow of the Mississippi River to support commerce, that as these spillways were installed, all of the folks that are downstream from this spillway are told, yeah, you want to build on that land, you can. You should put your house up so many feet, but at some point, spillway and open when necessary, and you are going to get flooded. And so I think that's a big part of why Southwest Louisiana folks are saying, well, you know, this is the way that it is. And they also realize that in the process of unleashing the Mississippi through their area, there are a tremendous amount of topsoil that is going to be flushed into that area that hasn't been in that area for 30 plus or more years. And that's a good thing. And so people along the Mississippi that farm these agricultural, it would be foolish for them in any given year not to have crop insurance. Because at some point, and the Mississippi, you know, it has a huge impact on the commerce of the United States.
If you're living in that flood plain and you get insurance, I mean, they've flat told you it's going to happen. And building your house up, it's 25 feet.
Yeah, it can be. You're right.
That's a long ways. That's you got to build your house up on top of, above the trees instead of just in them. I mean, it's pretty amazing, I think. But I'm very, very, you know, I understand the situation. I lived in Needles, California. Needles, California, the golf course in Needles, California is a flood control thing for the Colorado River. And every time the river, when they let the water out and it gets up bigger, then the golf course floods. But other than that, when it's not flooding, it's a nice place. And so nobody ever gets upset except that they went for a long time one time and they built a golf building there with a restaurant and such in it. And when they finally did let the water out, it wiped out the building. But they lived with it. But they couldn't get any insurance because it was a spillway for the river itself, and so they just had to eat it, as they say, which cost a little bit of money. They didn't build it back in the same place. They did catch on and changed it, but the golf course is still there and still working. But again, how long ago was it that they opened these floodgates? Because they've controlled everything so well that they don't do it very often. That's right.
The Morganza above Baton Rouge hasn't been opened since 1973.
Yeah, see, people get pretty lackadaisical in that amount of time. So commenting on is how really they've taken this, because almost everybody I've seen on television, they've talked to them, I've interviewed them, and they say, well, we knew it was going to happen someday. And so, and I'm really amazed that you talk about common sense. Most people don't seem to have it, but these people do, and I think it's great that they do. I think it's terrible, for example, now that this last Joplin tornado, they've upgraded that to an E5. That's the highest rating of ever.
Well, and you look at it, I can only imagine what it's like on the ground because it's so horrific on the television. If you superimposed what Hiroshima and Nagasaki looked like after the nuclear bomb was dropped from an aerial photo and side by side showed Joplin, Missouri, the way that it just obliterated everything except masonry buildings is eerie.
And even some of those, I'll tell you, it is absolutely amazing. So, and then the other thing, of course, that I was thinking in terms of these people who are giving all their money to the Reverend, there is kind of a thought that there's been an awful lot of devastation, natural devastation, and maybe they're considering that that's what's going to happen at the end of the world, because there have been a lot of storms and a lot of earthquakes and a lot of tsunamis and all these things just all at once, and especially maybe a lot of people will think God has something against that part of the country or something.
Well, it has mostly to do with the Rocky Mountains and the Gulf of Mexico. And when the cold air comes down from Alaska and Canada and over the Rocky Mountains, and then the warm air comes up the Mississippi Valley from the Gulf and they meet, poor Missouri and Oklahoma are right there at ground zero. But the intensity of this and the fact that we as a country are growing. And, you know, back 50 years ago, there was a lot fewer populated areas than there are now. And so tornadoes like this used to go through and tear up barns and some farmhouses and haul a few cows and pigs up into the air. But now it's hitting these highly populated areas like in Alabama and in Missouri. And it is just, it's devastating them.
Well, I'm just wondering, who was the one that decided that they'd make huge cities in this area where they're going to have problems like that? I would think that we'd stay away from there. I'm very glad that I don't live there, and I won't live there. I actually, where we live right now in the Pacific Northwest, I think is probably about the safest place there is to live. They keep telling us we're going to have a major earthquake someday, but they've been telling us for a lot of years, and that's the only thing I hear. We don't have much for tornadoes or any of that kind of thing. So we do have floods now and then, but again, don't build in a floodplain.
Well, you know, the New Madrid fault line runs right under the Show Me State in the middle of the country. And when you think of earthquake faults, you think of California. But Missouri is poised to also have, as is the Pacific Northwest with the Cascadia subduction zone. I mean, it's not a matter of if, but it's a matter of when.
And that's one of the things that has worried me, because a little bit, I mean, I don't think, I guess worried is overstating it, but the thought has reached me that maybe all of this big movement of the tectonic plates in Japan and on that fault line could perhaps instigate something up towards us and maybe hurry our again, we keep being told that we're going to have this major earthquake, but that we are going to have it, not if, but when, and maybe some of this is going to just urge it on or something. That is the thing that worries me. I'm looking for it. I did live through one earthquake in up in Washington at one time, but it, again, wasn't that big and was no big thing. I went to a school that was broken in half because of a major earthquake way back in the 1900s, but the school still stayed there for 50 years or something like that. Didn't fall down, so no big thing. So we're just kind of sitting back on the edge of our seat and waiting.
Yep. It says here that a tornado that's killed 170 people in Missouri, the single deadliest twister in the past 60 years. Prior to that, a tornado in Flint, Michigan in 1953 killed 116 people.
Yeah, and that's even more devastating today, because today we usually have some sort of a warning of what's going to happen, and we don't lose as many people. I was a little surprised that many people were killed in that particular storm, but I guess it struck rather quickly and rather harshly. And so, you know, so many times we've got such good tracking and facilities to know what's coming and what's not coming nowadays, it's almost scary. But this one didn't. This must have caught them really off guard.
It had to. And to see the destruction of their regional medical center there. I mean, this is a city of 50,000 people. And
talking to a lady on television the other day, yesterday I guess it was looking for her son. And they said, well, have you gone around and checked all the hospitals and everything? She says, well, there are no hospitals. You got to drive three states away to get to the hospitals. And so, no, I haven't checked all the hospitals. We're talking about a month or a time to do that. She says, I've called and things like that, because they were expecting her to go out and actually look for her son, because just giving it a description might be hard to follow. But it really wiped out a large section and a lot of people. And so, you know, everything was filled up that was close. So they've gone miles and miles to put people in under care. So it's really scary. And
well, sure, when you have thousands of homes destroyed and businesses like the big box stores, Home Depot and Walmart, with all the people in them, you're going to have lots and lots of injuries that are going to just totally overwhelm a little town like Joplin.
Yeah, I don't know how many injuries there were. We only know that 170 people were killed. to be a whole lot, or 125, I guess, were killed. But that's, there's got to be a whole lot more than that were injured. We're running out of time. Guess what?
Yes, we are.
And it went rather quickly here.
It did.
We're going to be back again next week. I don't know. We haven't decided yet what we're going to talk about next week. But
well, I propose the topic of redistricting as one of our topics for next week. And I'll talk more about that next week.
And I'm sure we'll have a lot of other things to talk about as well. So I'm going to say goodbye and say thanks for joining us. And thank you, Cindy and Bradley, both for being here.
Yes, thank you very much for all the blog talkers. And it's great.
Have a great week, y'all. Lord bless.
So we're going to be back again next time, same station, so to speak. See you then. Bye.
Check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.